Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we've got all fresh content for you. We're going to meet the director of New Reach, a nonprofit organization committed to making homelessness in Connecticut rare, brief, and non-recurring. New Reach recently received a $2.5 million grant from the Bezos Day One Families Fund, the largest private gift in the organization's history. So we're going to get a few insights on how that funding is going to be utilized to better address homelessness here in the region and learn all about this organization. Then we're going to resume our series looking at the health and quality of life in the Lower Naugatuck Valley using the Valley Community Foundation's latest index report, as seen through the eyes of the Regional Health District Director. And while it's early January, the good work and efforts surrounding community agriculture never really stops at Green Village Initiative, which was a recent Connoisseur Cares program honoree. We're going to close chatting up their executive director about what's happening today at the farm and what's in store as she and her team dig in for 2023. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Speaking of farming, the Westport Farmers Market is going to host a four-part lecture series at their winter location at Gilberti's Herb Gardens in Westport. Lectures will be held every Thursday through January at 1 p.m. Corporate sponsor Dharma Massage is co-hosting the series to help create an outlet for health education. On January 12th, come on out and meet Dr. Andrew Crepe and learn about muscle activation, neurological inhibition, and chronic pain. Or head down to Gilberti's January 26th for a talk about gut healing along with an anti-inflammatory bone broth detox soup demo using many of the ingredients you can find at the market. For more information, visit westportfarmersmarket.com. Well, we're reuniting with an old and dear friend here at the award-winning For the People. I'm so pleased to be talking to Kellyanne Day, an old friend with an organization that's been around for a long time, but has a relatively new name called New Reach. New Reach is a nonprofit organization committed to making homelessness in Connecticut rare, brief, and non-recurring. And this organization was recently recognized in a big way with the largest private gift in their history, a $2.5 million grant from the Bezos Day One Families Fund. So we're going to talk about that along with all the other important stuff you need to know about New Reach and how you either might be able to support their efforts in some way, shape, or form, or take advantage of their resources. So Kellyanne, without further ado, welcome back to the show. It's been a while, and I'm glad to hear your voice.
Thank you, John. You too, and Happy New Year.
So let's give the folks all the necessary background information. Give us the whole picture of what New Reach is doing.
Sure. So I know a lot of listeners probably have heard the term ending homelessness. And the way we look at how we're going to end homelessness is really in three parts, John. It's making homelessness rare. So preventing folks from falling into homelessness, that's a prevention piece. Making it brief when folks do have a crisis. So that's our crisis services, our shelters, and our diversion. And then making it one time, and that's providing available, affordable, supportive housing. So New Reach covers all three of those areas. So we provide homeless prevention services, we provide crisis services, and we provide affordable and supportive housing. So when folks hear the term ending homelessness, there's a lot more behind it than just thinking that no one will ever be homeless again. It's really about having a system that prevents homelessness, addresses it quickly when folks fall into crisis, and has an exit strategy.
And your agency resources are virtually available to almost our entire listening area, Fairfield and New Haven counties, right?
That's correct. Yes. So we have programming in greater New Haven and in Greater Bridgeport as well, and a little bit in Danbury and some of the other Fairfield County towns.
And it's been a few years since we talked to you, and last time we talked to you and the previous few visits that we had with you was under the former brand of the agency. Just remind us of what that was for folks who are longtime listeners who actually may have heard your voice before.
Sure. So we were incorporated as New Haven Home Recovery back in 1990, and we went through a name change back in 2014. And that was really reflective of the fact that we were growing to a point where we were no longer just serving Greater New Haven.
Great. Well, we'll talk a little bit more from your view about the state of homelessness in Connecticut right now, but let's deal with the headlines. Whenever you stamp the word millions after a dollar sign, it's good news, especially when it's coming in your direction. Tell us just briefly, you know, recap the whole Bezos Fund experience and maybe give us some ideas about where you and your team think this injection of grant funds might be best utilized.
Yes, great. Yeah, we were so excited and so humbled when the folks from the Bezos Day One Fund contacted me back in, I think it was in September, and asked us to apply for this award, which we did. I believe that our name, the name of our organization, was elevated up through national advocates and professionals who've been working in the field for a number of years. And so we had the opportunity to kind of put our best foot forward, talk to them about the work that we're doing in prevention and crisis and homelessness. And they awarded us $2.5 million, John. So that's over 5 years. We're really excited to be able to use that to do more of the work that we're doing. And specifically, we're going to be working in Fairfield County, New Haven, and actually across the state to move folks, families specifically, out of shelter and into housing as quickly as possible. One of the issues that we're all dealing with around the state right now is the lack of affordable housing, and that has caused a bit of a bottleneck for families who are in crisis and need to move into shelter, the opportunity to move into shelter, and you know, folks who are in shelter are struggling to move out because there's not a lot of available units or supports.
Right, so, I'm seeing here family homelessness in Connecticut is almost doubled in recent years.
That's correct. So since March of 2020, the number of families who are homeless have almost doubled, and that is you know, across the state and really across the country as well. But in a small state like Connecticut, it's really impactful.
So a lot of that has to do with the entire system that surrounds prevention, crisis intervention, and housing is not fully funded. Let's talk a little bit about those issues and how New Reach is working to address them.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, you know, the system, and as you just mentioned, the system needs to be fully funded in order to function. So, you know, it's kind of the perfect storm right now after the pandemic. We have vacancy rates that are very low, so the number of available units are very low throughout the state. Folks, their income is not keeping up with the increased rents that landlords are able to provide. That landlords are asking for, and evictions are up. So these factors are a direct contributor to the increased number of families who are homeless.
And it's so terribly ironic, but also perhaps good that this program is broadcasting on the first weekend of the long Connecticut General Assembly session, because hopefully some lawmakers or those who may be able to influence them are listening. Homelessness of families in Connecticut almost double, and the funding, every dollar it takes to run program services in Connecticut, is about half of what you need. So the state only covers about 58 cents for every dollar it takes to make a difference.
That is absolutely correct. And thank you for bringing that up, because New Reach and our partners across the state have a legislative agenda where we're asking the state legislature basically to rescue the homeless response system. You know, we need to strengthen the organizations that are providing prevention, crisis, and we need to develop more affordable and supportive housing. Those are the three crucial areas. And there's so many organizations around the state that are doing this work, but we're all doing it on a shoestring budget. We are not fully funded. And so we're really hoping that the legislature hears our call for a rescue.
Excellent. I hope they do, too. Now, there are some upcoming events that our listeners can participate in that are going to inject some additional funding into your programming. Tell us a little bit about Fairfield County's Giving Day and the importance that that plays.
Yeah, we're really excited. Fairfield County's Giving Day is on February 23rd. And it's mostly an online event, and that is happening for all the organizations that are servicing Fairfield County. And so New Reach is one of them, and so we'll be asking our Fairfield County friends and neighbors to support our organization. Again, you know, keeping in mind that we do need that funding in order to keep the doors open and in order to keep the programs operating. So really excited about that, and thankful to the Fairfield County's Community Foundation for running that event. And the New Haven Greater New Haven Foundation will be running a similar event called the Great Give in May of this year.
Very good.
You know, and both of these are excellent opportunities to come together and raise funds to end homelessness.
You're making a suggestion that folks who may hear this program can start right now getting ready for February 23rd by gathering teammates, coworkers, family members, others in their community or in their neighborhood, all cobbling together just a few dollars each. But when united, pot of money can make a much bigger difference.
Absolutely. This is a great opportunity for civic groups or student groups or folks who work in offices or corporations that want to do something, that want to give back. This is a great way to pool some of their funding and have fun at the same time, maybe have a little competition in terms of who could raise more money for the organizations. But it really is a great way to kind of get involved. And the main point is the amount doesn't matter. It's the number of donations that we can receive is often what we're looking at. Obviously, we love the larger amounts, but it's just great to see so many folks in the community who understand and are willing to support at any level the work that we're doing.
Excellent. And full disclosure, I am the secretary, actually, of the board of directors for the New Haven Center for Performing Arts that in part operates College Street Music Hall. That needed to be said because up on June 1st, we want everybody coming out to College Street Music Hall to support Stand Up Against Homelessness in the last minute or so that we have. Just give us the lowdown on that, Kellyanne.
Yeah, John, I didn't know that. That's exciting. But yeah, we are so excited. This is our second year where we're doing a stand-up comedy against homelessness. And this year we're featuring Bianca Del Rio. And so she's an American drag queen. She's a comedian, an actor, and she's best known for winning the sixth season of RuPaul's Drag Race. So we're really excited. I know that we talked with College Street earlier today, and I think those tickets are going to be going on sale next week. So we'd love to have everyone come out on June 1st in New Haven and see a fantastic show and help a great cause at the same time.
And we all hear about portion of proceeds, and the best part of Stand Up Against Homelessness June 1st at College Street Music Hall is 100% of ticket sales are going toward ending homelessness in Connecticut. Kellyanne, it's been great to catch up with you again. We really appreciate your time and the great work your team is doing and the incredible work that I'm sure will be happening thanks to the Bezos Fund granting and all of the support we trust you will be raising through Fairfield County Giving Day and the Great Give, as well as the Stand Up Against Homelessness fundraiser. Folks, if you want to make a difference, you can email your legislators and municipal leaders and let them know there needs to be more funding available for homeless services. Make a gift to New Reach. Or volunteer, your sweat equity and volunteerism is also worth a lot. And if you want to learn more about how to get involved, just go to newreach.org. Kellyanne Day is their CEO and our guest this morning for our first new segment of 2023. Kellyanne, great to hear your voice, and we'll talk to you again soon. Well, this morning we are going to pick up our conversation talking about the Valley Community Foundation's Community Index. We want to let folks know that this Community Index was a collaborative project with the Valley Community Foundation, Griffin Hospital in the Naugatuck Valley Health District, and Data Haven. And we're so pleased to bring in the representative of one of those organizations right now. We're speaking with Jessica Christie. She's the Director of Health for the Naugatuck Valley Medical Reserve Corps, the Region 5 Medical Reserve Corps Coordinator, and the Director of Health for the Health District itself. She's also chairing the region's health consortium. So a lot to talk about this morning, Jessica, and thank you for joining us here for this first interview, technically, of the new year. And I know armed with the information from the index, along with all the other work that you have been doing and plan to do, it's going to be a really busy year for you guys. So let's start by just reminding people a little bit about your organization. And if you could also just touch on the dynamics between a health district and a health department.
Absolutely. Thank you, John, and Happy New Year. I'm really excited to be here and talk not just about Naugatuck Valley Health District, but all of those things that you just introduced, which is really important to our local community and larger regional community. So as you mentioned, Naugatuck Valley Health District is a little bit different than a municipal health department. And the reason for that is we serve six communities in the Naugatuck Valley region. We cover a population of about 126,000 people, comprised of residents that live in Ansonia, Beacon Falls, Derby, Naugatuck, Seymour, and Shelton. And through this collaborative process, related back to the community health assessment called the Valley Index, we also include the town of Oxford, our neighbor, as part of the Housatonic Valley Health District. So Naugatuck Valley Health District, or NVHD, we provide a number of public health services. We have sort of four main divisions within our district, and we focus on environmental health services. That division is led by my assistant director, Melanie, and do things like license and inspect restaurants, work with installers and homeowners for septic systems, tenants and landlords for housing issues and complaints, lead poisoning inspections, and work around that. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as it relates to what we found in the assessment. And then other kinds of nuisance complaints and pool inspections and kind of anything around environmental or environmental health concerns, our division staff work to address that proactively and reactively. We have a community health division, which is led by our assistant director, Carissa, and that is comprised of our health education team, our public health nurse, our accreditation specialist, and some of our grant projects. We have our administrative team, which our administrators and our administrative support staff are just wonderful and help us and help all of our callers and people that visit us every day pull files and make sure that we have the information flowing that we need to. And then we have a pretty robust emergency response program where we do public health preparedness and response activities beyond pandemic. We have planned for a number of public health issues and drill and train and exercise. And you mentioned the Medical Reserve Corps. That is a volunteer unit that we manage. And we welcome anybody 18 and older who have non-medical and medical backgrounds that want to learn and train in the field of public health emergency preparedness and response. And then they might actually be activated and help us like so many have done throughout this pandemic so far. So, again, we are, you know, a local regional health district serving our six communities, but we partner with so many other surrounding municipalities and partners. And that's where that regional kind of component comes in. And our state, in the absence of county government, is broken up into five planning regions. Mm-hmm. So I lead and co-chair an emergency response work group for the northwestern part of the state, as well as the volunteer coordination for that part of the state. So okay. We are very integrated with our partners and happy to help whoever we can, whenever we can. And, you know, we just hit our 50-year milestone of being a health district in 2022. So 1972 is when Naugatuck Valley Health District was formed. And this year we also just achieved our national reaccreditation status. So this has been a really big year for us, coming off the curtails of some pretty tough ones.
And many congratulations due for all of those achievements. So I guess the dynamic between a health district and a health department is as simple as a district encompassing multiple communities, where a health department would tend, in Connecticut at least, to be more dedicated to one single potentially larger community, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you were to go to town hall for any type of service in a municipal department, that health department would likely be located, you know, within that town hall or something like that, serving that one community, although they do participate in those other kind of regional working groups I mentioned. Mm-hmm. But we are sort of independent, but serving the residents and the communities, and are governed by a board of directors that represent each of our six communities rather than our chief elected officials.
Okay. Well, as we talked in preparation for going on the air this morning, you mentioned that you're going into phase two of a community health improvement plan, which is focusing on three priorities and is really interested in inviting community members, business owners, and others who live in the community served by your district to participate. What are those three priorities that you're going to be focusing on in this next phase of the community health improvement plan?
Sure. And yes, that's exactly right. So now that we have our community health assessment, which we call the Valley Index, and that's sort of the plan that includes the data, right? The statistical data, the feedback that we heard in listening sessions with our community members, pulled data from all various sources. And we have started to digest that, and now we need to act on that. So the byproduct of the Valley Index is something called the Community Health Improvement Plan. And this is something that both our local area hospital, Griffin Hospital, and the Naugatuck Valley Health District both have to have and work on over the next 3 years. So this is a continued collaborative effort working with the foundation, the hospital, our lovely partners, and especially our community members with lived experience or just a vested interest that want to participate. So when we looked at the Valley Community Index, and specifically the health chapter, we were able to draw out sort of five common wow factors, right? Mm-hmm. And these were things that included substance use disorders, you know, not just opioids. We're looking at alcohol, vaping, tobacco, marijuana. Mental health was a huge common theme that kept popping up, not just in the health chapter, but throughout the whole sort of index and our listening sessions. Chronic conditions, people that live with chronic conditions every day. Access to healthy food options or food in general was another big concern. And access to healthcare or health services. So we held an event 1 month after we launched the index and invited our partners and community members. We had Mayor Cassetti come, which was really great. And we rolled up our sleeves and we decided we needed to narrow this down to three kind of reasonable priority areas that we could sort of focus on, understanding that no one is important than the other, but that we needed to create kind of action plans to address or start to address some of these topics. So we landed on mental health and behavioral health issues, specifically related to stress, adverse childhood trauma events, people feeling isolated and sort of returning to this new normal world that we're trying to figure out how to we live in. Mm-hmm. We have substance use disorders as another priority area, and this is sort of a continuation from our previous iteration of the CHIP, and then access to health services. And what we decided as a group during that workshop was that, you know, chronic conditions and access to food and sort of these other common themes that were popping up really kind of fall within all these other priority areas. So those won't be lost upon. We're going to look at those. But within this health improvement plan, we are inviting our community members and our partners to join us to really set measurable objectives and try to come up with ways we can do early intervention or reactive programming to try to address some of these areas of concern.
Great. So as we move on to a few other subjects of conversation, I just want to take a moment to create a break here. And if you'll stick with us, we hope folks that are listening also do. We're going to come back and talk a little bit about how, as a result of the data through the Valley Community Foundation's Community Index, the Naugatuck Valley Health District is beginning to focus on public involvement to self-address things like diabetes self-management, fall prevention, living with chronic pain, and programs like mental health first aid and creating other support systems. We'll be back to talk more with Jessica Christie, Director of Health for the Naugatuck Valley Health District, in just a moment. Stay with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. If you made a resolution to quit using tobacco in 2023, we've got some help for you. Griffin Health is helping individuals looking to quit smoking with its free smoking cessation program. That's it. Learn to Quit teaches a variety of methods to help individuals quit smoking over the course of 4 weekly sessions. The program consists of Wednesday night meetings at 6 p.m. from January 18th through February 8th at the Griffin Health Family Health Center on Commerce Drive in Shelton. Participants learn how to develop a quit plan that addresses their personal behaviors and habits, and they must be prepared to attend all 4 sessions. To register for That's It, Learn to Quit for 2023, call 203-732-1369. That's 203-732-1369, or just visit griffinhealth.org. We're back. Thanks for staying with us. Jessica Christie is on the line. She's the Director of Health for the Naugatuck Valley Health District, along with wearing several other hats, Director of the Naugatuck Valley Medical Reserve Corps, the Region 5 Medical Reserve Corps Coordinator, and she's also a working group chair for the Region 5 initiative. So, Christie, as we are talking, we know that one of the things that is most important is, sort of the teaching a person to fish philosophy instead of just giving them the fish. And that means that self-addressing public health issues to the extent that they can really relies on the buy-in of the populations that you're serving. And I thought it was really interesting, this lineup of various types of programs that you have or will be mounting. And one of the particular areas that has been mentioned by several guests on this series is the incidence of diabetes, and you're helping folks with the diabetes self-management program.
That's right. What we found in the data and, what we've seen in previous iterations of our community health assessments or Valley Community Index reports is that we sort of hover around the average for the state of Connecticut. When you look at the Valley towns, which again are the 6 Naugatuck Valley Health District town and then the town of Oxford covered by the Housatonic Valley Health District. But when you start to look at the town-specific data, we have numbers that are really much higher than, the state average when we're looking at type 2 diabetes, hypertension, or, blood pressure and sort of other contributing factors that lead to these chronic conditions. And so what we're really interested in is, first off, looking at how we can help people that are living this in their daily lives and how we can help provide them the tools and their caretakers and their family and their friends to be able to make those changes that maybe are big, maybe are small, but hopefully impactful. And then also looking at how we can prevent these things from happening in the first place, and then also how we can keep people out of our hospitals for conditions that can be managed or prevented. So,
yeah, you mentioned chronic pain was one of those concerns as in the suite of chronic conditions.
Yeah. So we have a number of evidence-based programs. So these are programs that are offered all over the country and sometimes internationally that have been proven to actually make a difference. And part of the Live Well Chronic series is a chronic pain workshop, which talks about everything from really what is pain, not just physical pain, but emotional and mind-body connection, fatigue management, pacing and planning your day, and medication management, and how healthy eating and exercise, and again, small but achievable goals can really help someone, which then hopefully might change their lives so much that we can hopefully take them off some of these medications that may contribute to some of the other issues that we're seeing.
Right, that domino effect of
dependence.
Yeah, the domino effect of the side effects of medications causing other issues that then put them in that vicious circle of being back into the emergency room or the hospital environment and protracted dependence on a number of other publicly supported programs. I mentioned balance and fall prevention. Talk about something that can potentially clog up the emergency room. I mean, I'm sure during this ICE outbreak, there were people who are the most careful on earth that were falling and ending up in the ER in Bridgeport at Griffin Hospital up in Waterbury from the Valley.
Absolutely. You know, it doesn't really matter your age when it comes to falling and weather related. I have taken a few spills myself, but when we look at the hospital incidence rates for falls or people who have fallen and have needed medical attention, it tends to be our elderly or senior population. And when we look at the Connecticut data versus our Valley data, again, the combined sort of average may not be alarming or as stand out, but when we start to look at our towns like Ansonia, Derby, Naugatuck, and Seymour in particular, our older adults are falling and going to the hospital or seeking medical attention for those falls way more often than the state average. And so, again, we are able to have our staff trained in these evidence-based programs where we go out into the community and work with our senior centers and other community centers and provide each session, which may have, you know, 10 or so participants, the tools that they can do at home, sitting down at a table, standing up, very light movements that can give them the confidence and the strength to hopefully avoid those falls.
As part of this series, as a matter of fact, in the last installment, we talked with your colleagues over at TEAM a lot about early childhood development, and they gave us an idea about the ripple effects of a child in crisis to health systems, to the economy, to the community, to employers. And you folks at Naugatuck Valley Health District are also looking at child wellness through a coalition working with residents and employers, because certainly when a child of an adult, even one who's in foster or adoptive care, gets sick, that potentially puts that adult, especially the single parent in a household, leading a household out of, it makes them have to call out from work. So mm-hmm. this sounds like an issue that's being addressed very effectively through your projects.
Yeah, you know, when we look at sort of the demographic makeup of our valley, about 19% of our valley are older adults and about 19% are younger youth and young population. So we have an equal sort of end of the spectrum here when we look at age demographics. Mm. But we have disparities within our young population when it comes to the most basic things that you think people should have access to, like a spot in a child care. I mean, I'm sure my colleague, Mr. Morgan from TEAM, talked about the a child care availability in the valley. I mean, we have over 2,600 spots that need to be filled, and we just don't have the care. And when you have children going without care, they're not getting maybe meals that those families are relying on. Maybe they're not getting the education or the access to tools and, school supplies sure. and things like that. So we have a vested interest in our young population, as well as our mothers and fathers and parents and guardians, and making sure that they're getting the help that they need from, you know, pre-pregnancy all the way through that early childhood, and childcare timeline in their lives. So, making sure that people understand that women and lower income adults especially have access to resources to be able to get healthy food options, either through our food pantries or through WIC, which is a program that we offer as well, mm-hmm. Through a number of our nonprofit organizations who are just so great at collecting donated items to give back to our families really in need here in the valley.
In the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Jessica, we want to remind folks that a lot of the programs that are addressing the issues brought to light in the most recent Valley Community Index can be underwritten through the Valley Community Foundation. And if there is a particular concern or issue that you've heard about on this program or any in our series so far, you might want to think about creating a designated gift passed through the Valley Community Foundation. Those gifts, especially ones that are designated to specific programs and underwriting, make all the difference in the world when we talk about the kind of programs that Jessica was discussing this morning. But Jessica, as we leave you, if there was a found basket of money that somebody wonderfully has designated to the Valley Health District, the Nanuk Valley Health District, what program would you potentially initiate that you're really just not financially or logistically equipped to tackle right now?
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, we wouldn't be able to do the things that we do in terms of these programs beyond our mandated statutory obligations mm-hmm. if it wasn't for organizations like the Valley Community Foundation that are able to provide us the generous funding to host and train and go out and do these things. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, we think about this all the time and try to prioritize sort of what our needs are as an agency and what our residents need from us and how we can meet in the middle and look to funders like the Community Foundation to do those. So two big projects that we're sort of looking at in the new year really are related to increasing our own access to information and files. So we do a ton of voluminous work on properties and septic systems and housing stock, and mm-hmm. Our housing stock in the Valley is very old. So there is often, work being done in terms of improvements or new developments or replacement of septic systems and things like that. So we are very interested in getting our files electronically available to our residents, understanding that it sounds like an easy task, but it's actually very labor and costly. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and we've got about a minute left. What would the other thing be?
It's around lead poisoning. You know, we have the new year now, and statutes have changed the levels of action items for children with lead poisoning, meaning their lead levels in their blood is elevated past a certain point. Those numbers have significantly dropped, meaning our cases are going to skyrocket. Mm-hmm. So we need resources, and we need the assistance of parents and pediatricians and our community to really understand how lead poisoning can have negative effects on especially our young population. So those are kind of our two big goals heading into the new year that we'll be working on.
Well, if anyone listening is interested in finding out how they can put their name and their legacy toward addressing these initiatives, they should be in touch with the Valley Community Foundation. And if they're interested in learning more about a number of issues that are going on in the Valley that may require their energy and attention, they can access the latest community index. This is the next in our series of in conversations talking about the Valley Community Index and the Valley Community Foundation's work. Jessica Christie has been our guest this morning. She is the Director of Health for the Nanuk Valley Health District, which is one of the collaborators on the index, along with the Foundation, Griffin Hospital, and Data Haven. Christie, thank you so much for your time today. All right. Well, to wrap up our first new fresh garden grown show of 2023. We're actually going to plant the first of two parts of an interview that we're going to be doing with Ellie Engram. You've heard her voice on the program before. You even heard us touting her organization just last week on the program. She is with the Green Village Initiative, GVI, or gogvi.org if you're checking them out online. They operate Reservoir Community Farm in Bridgeport, but more importantly, they grow food, knowledge, leadership, and community through urban gardening and farming to create a more just and bountiful food system in Greater Bridgeport and beyond. So they were a recent recipient of our Connoisseur Cares program, and we're so pleased to bring you this first of two interviews we're going to be doing with Ellie, the following one next week. So Ellie, we don't have a super amount of time, but there is plenty of time to talk about some of the exciting stuff that's going on. And let's start it off by reminding folks about Reservoir Community Farm. You've had your growing pains. You've had your kind of a municipal interface challenges. How are things going at the farm right here in the first few days of the new year?
Yeah, happy new year. And thank you so much for having me, John. It's a pleasure to be talking to you and all the Connoisseur Media folks and listeners. So last time I spoke with you, we were engaging and figuring out what the future would look like for Reservoir Community Farm. We're a 1.7-acre community farm that's run by our nonprofit Green Village Initiative over here in Bridgeport. And the site is so much more than just a production farm growing vegetables. It's a site for our farmers market, for the largest community garden in the city. It's a site that employs over 25 Bridgeporters every single growing season. And that's not to even mention the, you know, thousands of folks who come through the gate to learn and celebrate with us each year. So it was really, it's hard to put into words how just absolutely warming, like it was warming my spirit, and it was so heart opening to see how many hundreds of folks came out, over 1,000 people signing petitions, and honestly, community members engaging in organizing to talk to our local city council and talk to local decision makers to ask for them to think differently in protecting our farm and renewing our lease. And so we were really lucky in spring of last year to come to an agreement, and the city gave us a 5-year lease extension for the site so that we could continue to do our programming. And we're really, really grateful for that and looking forward to kind of building deeper relationships with our elected officials and thinking about what the future of agriculture looks like, not just for this site, but for all sites in our city so that we can really protect them in perpetuity and have green spaces to do this work on. So it was a really challenging time this time last year of uncertainty, and our community and the farmers and gardeners and school teachers, everyone really stepped in and like held us through that process. So I don't take credit for it.
Yeah. Well, for folks who may be grappling, well, Ellie's been on the show several times, going back a few years, talking about the prospect that the city of Bridgeport was going to be utilizing the land that Reservoir Community Farm is on for a new library branch. But as we hear now and learned last fall, that project at that location is definitely off the books for at least 5 years. And in the meantime, hopefully you will succeed in securing a much more permanent situation for Reservoir Community Farm. We'll certainly help advocate for that. One of the other things that GVI does, Ellie, is you get people's hands into the ground all over town in Bridgeport and the Bridgeport area. Fill us in on what's cooking at the community gardens and how you're going to be dealing with that for the new year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we feel really lucky to work with 12 community gardens located all around Bridgeport. And so each garden is in either a different neighborhood or a different part of our neighborhoods and has a different kind of profile, different character. So we've got a group of Puerto Rican grandmothers who are the main leaders at one garden, and they are specifically growing foods to be able to make their famous sofrito and give it to their neighbors. At another garden site, there's an enormous fig tree that I've been present at when it's ripening, and folks will stop by and ask our amazing gardener at that garden, hey, like, I'm Saya, can I have some of your figs? It's like beautiful. Each garden has its own energy and vibrancy, and they're led by volunteer community members who we call our garden captains, who do this incredible work of engaging folks who are walking by, who help us coordinate getting volunteers to these sites all throughout the year to keep them looking beautiful and feeling really productive. And they're real leaders in their community. I think leadership, sometimes even I myself can go, ooh, leadership, that's a big word. Mm-hmm. But it can look like exactly what these neighbors do, just guiding other people to get their hands in the soil on these sites. It's really a magical work that they do. And it helps make our city and the places and the streets that we live and walk on into spaces where you know other people's faces. And yeah. Know what's going on. It's incredible work how community gardens are able to weave together the tapestry of the different neighborhoods in our city. And we feel really lucky to help coordinate getting them resources, work with them for, like I said, volunteer days. We're always looking for volunteers to help us with that, especially during the springtime, helping those gardens get going. And we work especially with Fairfield U. We're really lucky to work with Fairfield University to do gardener-designed data collection at these sites so that gardeners can kind of map what they're doing and what they're most proud of at each garden.
Yeah, and you make such an interesting point about how, and this really speaks to why Green Village Initiative is so much more an initiative than a farm or a community garden, because each of these sites, along with Reservoir Community Farm, it's a gathering place, and it is a place where neighbors can expose themselves and their cultures and their cooking and eating habits and the food that they make to others who may have lived next door to this person for months or years or even decades, and they may smell the food cooking, but maybe they never even engage that neighbor.
Yeah, exactly. And like, food is one of the most beautiful common denominators of being human, of being alive. And I feel so lucky to be connected to work where we get to talk to people about the growing of food, which is in a lot of ways, like, it seems unusual to us now in this day and age, but it's like such an important and visceral and sacred part of what keeps us going, keeps us alive. And if folks are interested, we have actually, thanks to Fairfield University and our collaboration with them, they collected and created recipes and created a digital cookbook that's available on our website, gogvi.org, if folks want to check that out. And some of these recipes are described with, you can click and hear the voices of our community gardeners, wow, which is amazing.
That's very innovative. I can't wait to check that out. So in the last few minutes that we have with you for this first part of our two-part discussion, Ellie, you mentioned how when you think of leadership, you sort of initially think of this kind of monolithic, unapproachable situation. But as you're growing to know community leaders in Greater Bridgeport, you're also developing the next generation of community leaders among young people. The GVI's youth leadership program is alive and well and strong. What's in store for 23 for this initiative?
We are looking ahead and getting so excited. So every year we employ 12 Bridgeport teens. They are paid to work with us over the course of 8 weeks on our farm, and they become urban farmers through these 8 weeks. They are learning everything from seeding to growing, harvesting, processing food safety. They become urban farmers, and they also become what we call food leaders, because leadership is really grown through the knowledge and the way that they pass on knowledge. It doesn't, as I said, leadership doesn't have to be scary, and it doesn't have to be elected. You become a leader when you gain knowledge and you become interested in being a resource to share it. So our youth, over the course of the summer, lead tours. They engage in creating events and having workshops with other community members
And youth, if you have a teen and who goes to school in Bridgeport and you're interested in getting them involved, those applications will be online this spring. And folks can also reach out to us. They can email youth@gogvi.org to ask questions. But we are really looking forward to having this next batch of young leaders join us. That program begins on the farm in late June at about the same time that our first farmers markets open in late June. So we're really excited for what this season will hold for kind of building new leadership at the farm and on our site.
Well, we've got a lot more to talk about with Ellie Ingram, the director of GVI, the Green Village Initiative. GoGVI.org is their website if you'd like to get to know them better. Before next week, when we come back and talk to Ellie a little bit more about their urban farmer training program, they're ramping up plans for an urban farm conservation tour. They've got a big spring kickoff event that we'll talk a little bit about. They've got jobs available for you, and also are engaged in an urban agriculture master plan. We'll talk about all of that with Ellie Ingram in the next segment of our interview with Green Village Initiative next week. In the meantime, Ellie, thank you, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you so much. Take care.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.